live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
And welcome, welcome, welcome. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, Neil Haley, and at Periscope, at TotalTutor. I got to get on Periscope now and tell about the new thing where I decided I'm going to write a book about all of my celebrity interviews. And luckily, I have a transcriber, but I'm excited about that opportunity. So that's something that came into mind after finishing my interview today with Alan Thicke. But I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Two favorite teams are the Broncos and the Steelers. Anytime I can have a former Steeler on the program, I want to know about the story about, you know, being part of that Rooney tradition, that great Pittsburgh Steelers tradition. So I'm excited to welcome former Pittsburgh Steeler, Lorenzo Freeman. Lorenzo, thanks for calling. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Lorenzo. Growing up, I always ask this question because I love to jump into the growing up. Did you always think you were going to be a football player? A lot of times I don't hear that that's not the answer. Somehow football came to you. What is your thought? What happened?
You know, it's funny that you would ask that. I grew up in New Jersey, South Jersey, a place called Camden, New Jersey. And ever since I started watching football, I have always been a Steelers fan. Did I always think I was going to be a football player? No, I actually enjoyed trading cards, collecting different articles about football, especially the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was one of the people who didn't play football until late in my life, maybe until I was a sophomore in high school. So football came late. However, I was always and have been a Steelers fan.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. So you were a Steelers fan, but you didn't know professional football at that point in time. Did you play any other sports as well, Lorenzo, growing up?
Yes, I played a little bit of basketball. I did a little bit of track, but when I started playing football, that was my true love, and I kind of stayed with that pretty much all throughout high school and my athletic career.
It's interesting that when we do that, we play all these different sports, and then we find out where our gifts and talents are. And you figured it out, Lorenzo, and the rest is history for sure. So once you chose football as really your career, going and choosing that college, was that, were you highly recruited going into college to go to play college football?
Yes, I have to say I was. Some of the schools that were looking at me was North Carolina, Missouri. These are some of the schools I recall taking my visits to. North Carolina, the Tar Heels, NC State, and Ohio State. And I hate to mention about, you know, I have to say for a brief moment, Penn State and, of course, Pitt, University of Pittsburgh.
So once you made that choice, what was the reasoning for choosing that university?
I chose University of Pittsburgh because when I took a visit here, one of the kids that were playing on the team actually was my host here in Pittsburgh. And I actually enjoyed the city very much. It reminded me of the atmosphere that I grew up in, New Jersey, city life. I liked the location of the campus, and it just felt like home. One of the other influences that led me towards the University of Pittsburgh. At the time, you could take the Amtrak train from Philadelphia, which is right over across the bridge in New Jersey, where I grew up in Camden, New Jersey, take it to Pittsburgh, and you can do very cheaply a round-trip ticket for $48. I remember that like it was yesterday. So that was another influence. It was easy to get to home back and forth, and I could see my family whenever I needed to or whenever it was time to go home on any breaks.
It's interesting, Lorenzo. I didn't know you played for the University of Pittsburgh, so I get another person I get to say hail to Pitt at the end of this.
That's right.
I'm a huge University of Pittsburgh fan. Pitt's my team. I work with Darnell Dinkins on a bunch of different projects with ethic Dinkins ethic training and doing SAT prep and working with his social media. So Pitt is my team. Playing through and through. And so, Lorenzo, when did you play with the University of Pittsburgh? Who was the coach at Pitt at that time?
I was the head coach at the time was Boge Fazio. I was recruited out of New Jersey by Joe Moore. And in my last year, senior year, we had Mike Godfrey. They changed the staff. So my final year, I got to play under Coach Mike Godfrey. But I also am a huge Pittsburgh fan. I still love to watch. I still follow him, and It's in my heart. It's in my blood.
It has to be. And when you went to play for Foch Fazio, you had a program that was still a top-notch University of Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
Think of the day I got the opportunity to interview Coach Sherrill last year, and it was fantastic for how unrecognized he is for that program and how a great coach he is with the University of Pittsburgh. I am, you know, based on his record after that, I still think he should be in the College Football Hall of Fame. I told Coach Sherrill that when I interviewed him, that, I mean, what he was able to do at the University of Pittsburgh, Johnny Majors, then Coach Sherrill, then comes Foch Fazio, who, again, one of the most awesome guys in the world.
I mean,
that's where I get the connection with you at the Foch Fazio golf tournament now. Okay, so I'm understanding more and more of it. But I was a huge fan of Foch.
Absolutely, so was I.
To go ahead, and I'm sure when you got to talk to him the first time, Foch, how amazing was the conversation, for sure. I mean, when you first got signed with Pitt, or were, he did a visit and got the chance to talk to you. Maybe he came into your living room, I don't know for sure.
First time around, Foch, I realized he was very, very, when I said, extremely knowledgeable of defense. He was very intense. He knew, I guess as to be expected, he knew every aspect of the game. And I enjoyed that. He was able to get the best out of people, make you work. And he knew how to work with people. And I just love his overall sincereness. And this, again, you had mentioned the Foch Fazio golf at Myron Cook Golf Fountain. That's why I enjoy going back, because it's my way of saying Foch and to Foch family, thank you, and thank you for giving me an opportunity. Thank you for having me on your radar and recruiting me. So enjoy the man. I enjoy his family. And I just enjoy the atmosphere of being with him at the time at the University of Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. And at that time when you went, you were highly recruited, and here you go, the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, you came the year after they kind of were national champions. I always will say it. Was it the year after that you joined Pitt?
My first year at University of Pittsburgh was the class of 83. So I was there from 83 to 87. And their defense was top ranked. It's been top ranked for a number of years when I was there prior to me getting there. And they kind of started losing a little bit, but it was very highly talented defense. I think at one time we were ranked number two on defense or number one. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was behind Florida State team. So it was a good team, good program, a good opportunity.
Well, when I started thinking about that, now my memory is remembering, because again, that was my team. As a kid, I bled University of Pittsburgh. My mom went to University of Pittsburgh. We had season tickets. So the year after the greatest game ever, with John Brown catching the touchdown pass from Dan Marino, the year after was the year if they expected Marino to be top notch, and you guys were picked to win national championship again. You had that same type of team, and I think you lost in the Cotton Bowl that year, right?
Yes, that's correct.
You lost in the Cotton Bowl, so your defense was really good, but the offense was just not what it was the year before, right? Am I correct?
That is correct.
But then you had to face SMU in the Cotton Bowl when you think of Eric Dickerson and Craig James. Wow.
Yeah. Right. Athletes, great legends.
Absolutely. I got to interview Eric Dickerson, and he's a tremendous guy, a really good guy, and really interesting about his conversation with SMU. So you started out at the pinnacle of Pitt, so you had to kind of go through, a learning curve of seeing a program kind of drop from its prominence to a less echelon. We all know the reasons why. It could be, again, the University of Pittsburgh, where they're going towards not as competing as well for football anymore and academic standards, and also looking at specifically just coaching not being the right fit, and you know how teams have their run and then it stops. How did you deal with it? Because, again, you're highly recruited. You think, you know, you're coming here, you're going to win a couple national championships or compete for national championships. And then when the program started to drop, how did you deal with that?
It was my first year. Was my freshman year. We went to the Fiesta Bowl. And coming into the University of Pittsburgh, understanding the legacy and some of the things and some of the games, the top-ranked defense, Dan Marino, of course, and all the other legends were there. You figure that you was going to have the opportunity. I figured I was going to have the opportunity to go to a major bowl every year, because I remember going into the weight room, seeing all the Peach Bowl, Sugar Bowl banners in the weight room.
Right.
And it's the wow. 4 years at the University of Pittsburgh. I'm at least a visit for different bowl games. I was unfortunately only able to go to the one of them, and that was the Fiesta Bowl. And the decline was hard, but they were always competing. We were still getting great athletes. What made it still fun, although we didn't go to the Fiesta Bowl, and although we didn't, other than the Fiesta Bowl the first time, what made it interesting that we had Penn State on our schedule. So right. No matter what our record was, we was always looking forward to play Penn State, because no matter, or West Virginia, and those were the rivalry games that we always got up. And I think removing those games, West Virginia, maybe Penn State, and some of the other top ranked schools, maybe the recruiting dropped a little bit. But it was a little difficult, but it was still enjoyable. But now looking at it as a fan, it's hard, but I'm still a major Pitt fan. I still enjoy watching it, looking for the return of the glory days.
They're going to. Trust me. Narduzzi's going to bring them back. And I believe in it. And I'm just excited on social media how much Pitt is buzzing on Twitter. So your career ends. You go on to play in the NFL. Did you think you were going to be drafted? Was that a good shot? What was the kind of thought process in that?
You know, at one point in time, I really didn't think about playing professional football. I guess the light went off on for me. As a junior, I really, you know, I just wanted to be a good student. I wanted to make decent grades, and I wanted an opportunity to have a good start in life. I never really thought about it until at the end of my junior year, and I found myself putting in the necessary time I had to be a good football player. I remember some people that I played with being drafted. I remember Bob Bukowski got drafted in the first round. I said, wow, I'm right there playing with it. I said, let me put forth a little more effort. And I made a constant effort to give it all I had, and whatever happened. My senior year, I broke my collarbone, and at one point in time, I was told that as a defensive end, I was ranked pretty high. But when I broke my collarbone, their ranking, they kind of fell off the radar. So I made a constant effort once I came back from my collarbone, the injury, that I was going to continue to work and try to get back onto the radar and draw some interest. Talked to a few teams, and they expressed interest, and Green Bay was a team that wound up drafting me. I went out to Green Bay, and once I got drafted in the fourth round, and things just went from there. And I truly believe after my experience in Green Bay, and I said to myself, really convinced myself that I can play in the league. It's something I think I can make at least retire, walk away from something, walk away the game from something, and that became my goal.
Quite interesting, for sure. And then the kind of thing, how did you end up with the Steelers? So you started with the Packers, and you were one of the greatest traditions in the world. Playing at Lambeau Field must have been amazing, for sure.
It was. It was an enriching tradition, of course. But that was the year it was 87, that was during the strike year.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
It was going through those things. I was the first defense lineman they drafted. In that area, that's when they had Charlie Martin there. Charlie Martin had got in some trouble off the field, and the city of Green Bay was calling for things to be done. There's some things, a decision I made. They wanted me to cross the picket line, play on a replacement team, and I didn't want to do that for my own reasons. So I chose not to. Didn't leave them in good light of me, and I just stood by what I believed in. After the season started, they decided to release me shortly after the season started, because everyone's happy to be back at work. And I got several phone calls. I remember I was in Washington or Dallas, one of the two teams, wanted me to sign. I got a call from the hotel room, and I still don't know how, from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and asked me would I come to work out, and would they would like to take a look at me. And that was just almost like, so to speak, like a miracle. Wow, Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm going back to the city in which I played my college ball in, going back to the city where my favorite professional team reside. I thought it was just perfect. So I came back, flew back, and it was easy transition for me. And I worked out for Coach Green, Joe Green, and another legend which I grew up idolizing, and back in the organization with the Rooneys. And I thought, wow, this is perfect. Worked out, and he asked me what happened. I just said, rather than going through this story, I said, it just didn't work out, and I believe that I can play in the league, and there's no doubt. He said, okay. And next thing you know, I was signed the contract, and I was back in Pittsburgh for 4 or 5 years, and it was great for me.
And definitely, let's kind of go in the history of that again. There's different different phases of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you're pretty impressed of my history of kind of bringing back at Pitt, especially when there's not a lot of information on you on Wikipedia. So I'm just trying to kind of
research
a little bit more of a challenge for sure, and with the different people I interview every day. But I want to go right into it. Is that you're playing in the late 80s, and the Steelers are starting to finally bring back a little bit of promise, starting to start to win a little bit more. You know, it was years of really, really down years, but after the strike year, they started to kind of piece together more of a winning tradition after a few down years, right? Correct?
That's correct. Yes. That's what I look at. You know, went through some struggles myself when I was there. At different times, we didn't play the best, but it was like, again, it was enriching tradition with the Steelers as well. It was a great opportunity. It was, you know, you've seen a lot of the faces that you met, a lot of the faces I have heard about. And it went through some good years. One of the years that we got to experience went to the AFC playoff games with the Denver Broncos. So
that's what I was going to say. At least you went to the playoffs.
Yes, absolutely.
And now it's the Broncos. And as I remember correctly, I think that was Elway's first year, correct?
That could be correct. Yes. Yes.
And then he was considered the crybaby, and
correct.
Think of the story. And I know it's hard being on the field at that time, but he was considered the crybaby, and you know, and Steelers were just, they backed themselves into the playoffs, and Elway, you know, everyone's touting him, but yeah, he didn't have the prominence at that point in time. That was 88, right? Or 89?
Yes, that was 80. Now you test my memory here. I think it was 80. It might have been 80, gee, either one. I think it was 89, if I'm not mistaken. I have to do my homework on it.
Yeah, 89. And so, and you guys didn't win at Mile High, right? Who was your quarterback? It was Cliff Stout, right?
Bobby Brister, yes.
Bobby Brister.
It was Buster. Yes.
What a fantastic guy he is. A very character, to say the least. Love to have him.
Character, absolutely.
Love to have him on the show. But when you were playing with the Steelers, were you getting a lot of playing time, or were you a backup? What was going on, especially that playoff year?
At different time. I actually got a chance to play in that AFC playoff game as the run. I think we had Houston, the Oilers, for AFC playoff wild card game, if I'm not mistaken. And then we, I think the second game we played was against, I think it was the Miami Dolphin and the monsoon storm, the big rainstorm. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes, I remember that. That was one where, hey, maybe we have a shot again, right? You know, and for sure. But when you're talking about Elway, what did you see something special even when you were playing against him, especially when he was a young quarterback?
Yes, I thought he was a great athlete. He was always a great athlete. He had great awareness on the field. He knew who was around him at any given moment. So he wasn't going to take a big hit. Had a quick release, in my opinion, similar to Dan Marino. Had eyes in the back of the head and a quick release, a strong arm. So those are some of the attributes I remember about John Elway.
And it just, again, just an amazing quarterback. And I'm a Bronco fan, so that's a good – I never thought we could get start talking about that. and relive on that. I think it's the Steelers-Broncos AFC Championship. We'll get our prediction soon about what you think the Steelers are going to do this year. And Pitt. I didn't think of the whole Pitt thing. Again, we got to get someone to update Lorenzo Freeman's Wikipedia page because of some of the amazing things he's done in his career, you know, brushing – towards greatness in so many ways. So let's kind of look at this. Your biggest year, you think, did you guys go to the playoffs how many times? You went against the Broncos, and then you're after that against the Dolphins?
No, that was all in the same year. That was our charge to the Dolphins, to the Denver Broncos. I think we had Houston, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm hoping this stuff might run together, we caught, and somebody probably can update me better, I think we played Houston Oilers in a wild card game.
And who was the coach? Was it Cowher, right? Or not?
No. Coach Knoll. All of my years under Coach Knoll.
You were down at Cowher. Okay.
Correct.
This is starting where the build-up starts. And this is Knoll's finally a surprising year. You're right. This was the 9-7 year, right? Where you packed in the playoffs, right?
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So you get there and you play the Oilers and you beat the Oilers.
Correct. And then I think we faced Miami, the Dolphins, and on their field. the away game in Monsoon, and then we beat them, and we went to the face of Denver Bronco, which we lost. So yeah. Close but no cigars.
But it was such a great, it was such a, I think, amazing year, and then you never made the playoffs again with them, right?
No, I haven't.
And yeah. and that was just a memory. Okay, when you talked about playing with, let's talk about a couple Steelers, first of all, and before we get to our predictions. And I always love to get these quotes, especially if you're in here. I'm looking at maybe writing a book, a celebrity book of celebrities listing them, so I'm always looking at these awesome quotes. Let's talk about, look at specifically enough, you said Coach Green. What did you learn from Mean Joe Green, especially when mentorship, coaching? Yeah,
I think I learned a whole lot from Coach Green. I was young, and when I played with him, I was relatively young. Of course, I follow him. I follow the Stills. I've always been a fan. But one of the most remarkable things about him, how, and I don't want to say gentle, but how much of a teacher he was, how much he understood. I mean, from playing the game, I think that's one of his greatest attributes. He understood what you're going through. He was no nonsense.
Right.
He always talked about take care of your business. He was one of the things we always talked about. He always talked about, one of the things I coach high school football today, and one of the things I tell my kids is some of the things that came from him and some of the things he said to me. Don't let me or anyone else be the judge of you making this team or how much playing time you get. Those mm-hmm. decisions are yours. You make that decision by going out there, taking care of your business on the football field or in practice or whatever the case may be. Because if you leave it in someone else's hand, they can make the wrong decision. And you don't want that to be. You don't want that to be the case. Want the decision to be all yours.
We're talking live to Lorenzo Freeman, former Pittsburgh Steeler and Green Bay Packer and Pitts Panther. And we're talking about things, and Coach Green really provided that great learning experience. What about playing under Coach Knoll, the legend? Did you gain from Coach Knoll?
Coach Knoll was pretty much in that same mold. He was a great teacher. He was to me, he was a philosopher. One of the things he always said, he said, dare to do something that's difficult for you to do. I mean, he used to use this one saying, if you was really good at catching a football over your right shoulder or your right hand, and you know you were good, and we know you're good at that, dare to try to catch a ball over your opposite shoulder with the opposite hand. Try it. I mean, the point he was trying to make is that sometimes when you do something so well, you don't want to really take the time. But sometimes you don't want to take the time to improve your other skills or another aspect of your game. Chance and sometimes risk foolish, but it has its rewards.
Definitely. And you take that to your coaching. I tell you, that really gets those kids. If you tell them the history of the Steelers,
absolutely,
when you're coaching high school football, and say, my experience as a high school football coach compared to many of the other teams in my league, I have a variety of experiences that I can bring to you guys. And that's tremendous that you're definitely coaching high school football. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So when you decided to hang it up,
yeah,
how difficult was it?
It wasn't difficult. It wasn't difficult for me at all. I mean, when it was done, I knew that the toll was taken on my body. I knew because great people like Chuck Knoll, sometimes this game passes you by. Sometimes you have to consider moving on with your life work. I was always wanting to know what my life work was, what was in the calling for me. So I was anxious because I knew this was a game I couldn't play until I was retired or to reach retirement age. I had to do something else. And I wanted to know in the back of my mind what that something else was. Although it was a little bit nervous, I was looking forward to making that transition from being a professional football player to what I was going to do for the rest of my life, or where my career was going.
Wow. So. That's quite interesting, for sure. Then you make that choice. And how did you kind of get into high school coaching high school football? Tell us that story.
you know, because I guess it was still in my blood. I started coaching when I first started coaching. I was looking for something to do. I went to take some time off, and after taking a couple months off, I was like, you know what? Still kind of had football in my blood. Let me at least try to give back and give something back, or some of my learning experience, some of my growing pains as a high school football player, my understanding how the game was supposed to be played, and see if I can actually give that back to someone. So when I coach, that's something I try to do. I try to understand how they feel now, put myself back to when I was in high school at that age, and just kind of coach them, you know, and teach them and try to get them to be better. So it was an easy transition for me. It was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. And are you still coaching football? High school?
Yes. Yes, I coach now. I'm coaching at Plum High School.
I didn't know that. Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so when I mentioned Darnell Dinkins, you know what he's doing out in the area then, too. I didn't know.
Yes.
So you're, okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I didn't know all your background, Lorenzo. Yes. We're going to have coffee sometime, talk about, especially if you're coaching at Plum High School, and we talk about this new SAT and stuff. We need to kind of collaborate sometime. Sure.
Yes, absolutely. We'd love to.
Okay, awesome. All right, let's go predictions now. Now, this is going to be the fun thing. Pitt, what do you think Pitt's going to do this year?
You know, I have to say, I'm looking for them to make a big splash in a bowl game. So I don't want to say undefeated, but I don't want to jig to think they're going to lose anything. But I'm thinking they're going to go to a major bowl game, and I think they're going to have a good showing. And I think from this coming year to the following year, I think it's going to continue to grow. So, you know, of course, my prediction, because I'm a huge Pitt fan, win the national championship.
Oh, wow. I will go 11. I will go with it like a they're going to win their section of the ACC, even though they're like pick sixth or seventh, which is ridiculous. They're going to win their section of the ACC, and they're going to play in the ACC championship game and then go to a major, a semi-major bowl. Give them a couple more years recruiting. That's it. So let's go Steelers. With your thoughts on the Steelers. Yeah.
I'm thinking they're going to win 14. 14 and 2? What do you think? 14 and, yeah.
I think so. I said it's going to be Steelers, Broncos, AFC Championship.
Yes.
The offense is unstoppable. And
yes.
It just all depends. I think the first game of the year against the Patriots is huge. Especially
yes.
Mr. Brady not playing. You got to win that game. You can't start slow. You start slow, it's going to destroy you.
I agree with you. And I think that's going to set the tempo for the full season. That game there, regardless of Brady or no Brady, that's going to be huge. I think the defense is going through some transformation, obviously, but I think the key is that I think they're going to be a lot faster up on defense, and I think the speed is going to buy them time to kind of gel to do the things they need to do to actually go for win 14 games. So that's my prediction: 14 wins.
All right, 14 wins. I think they're going to be in the AFC Championship. And then it's going to be I tell you, the Broncos are going to be awesome as well this year because
yes.
I believe that you kind of allow Peyton to do what Peyton wants to do and have the mentality of Kubiak. They're going to have that winning tradition of Broncos. Elway's going to be very involved. Either it's going to be Elway will be the GOAT or the hero this year because this is his team and all that stuff. Okay, Lorenzo, I know. So you're coaching high school football. What else are you doing again? I don't know if I missed that or not. Yeah.
I work full time at a company called Leeds. They're a promotional marketing apparel and different things like that. I've been doing that for about 2 years. Love it. And that's what I've been doing. I worked at Sony prior to that for about 15 years as a production warehouse manager.
All right. Well, and do you have any social media or anything where people can find information if they have to Wikipedia you?
You got to Wikipedia me.
Let me figure out how do we update that.
Update it, absolutely.
It's not the easiest thing in the world to update it as well, Lorenzo. We'll stay in touch. Definitely have coffee sometime, talk about things, especially football and all these different things. So I'm glad we were able to connect. And being in Pittsburgh, we'll definitely sit down sometime and talk. So best of luck to all your ventures, and I really enjoyed the conversation today.
And you too.
Say hail to Pitt. I have Chris Solman, all of them. Say hail to Pitt. All right, let's go with that.
Hail to Pitt. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
All right, thanks, Lorenzo. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show. We'll be on live in about 10 seconds. Goodbye. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Spotlight Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, Neil Haley, and at Periscope, at TotalTutor. As I got a Periscope more, for sure, it's, I guess, in the next couple weeks I might. All great platforms. You can follow me on all of those. An amazing day of interviews. And it continues, and I'm so excited to welcome the program. Multi-Grammy Award winner and Dove Award multi-winner, John Schlitz. John, thanks for calling, man, and how are you?
I'm doing good, buddy, and thank you for your interest in what I do.
Absolutely, and in Christian music, you're a legend from what I've heard, from people that have told me that.
It sounds like my publicity, yeah. You've been reading my publicity.
So did you always think you wanted to be a musician? I always liked these stories because it kind of leads me to where your passion. And growing up, did you always want to be a musician?
No, actually I didn't. I think when I was 13 or 12 or 13, a friend of mine started learning how to play guitar, and I said, I like that idea. And so I didn't want him to get one up on me, so I went and bought a guitar, first thing I think I ever bought on my own. And we took lessons together, and then we took lessons from the person who was giving us lessons, and and then we started our own band, and I got the fever then. I think I was about 13 and had my own band by that time, and it was a lot of fun, and I thought I'd do it until I went to college. Then I went to college and kept doing it, and then I thought I'd finish after that, and kept doing it, and 40 years later, I'm still having a fantastic time, and music is a very important part of my life.
Did you start in Christian music, or were you when you started playing in bands?
I actually back then I don't know if Christian music even existed, at least the kind of Christian music I'd listen to.
Right.
And at that time, I believed in God, but I had no idea who Christ was. So, Really, in a roundabout way, I really don't believe I was a Christian yet, and had to go through a lot of hassle. Let's put it this way: almost committed suicide, and only through Jesus Christ am I here today. And changed my life. I gave up secular music altogether, and thought I'd never sing again. And 5 years later, Bob Hartman called and said, "Would you be part of Petra?" And my life changed. It's gone in many different cycles, and got saved for 5 years. I was a mining engineer, a cost and schedule engineer. I worked in a tool and die factory sweeping floors. I did a lot of different things where God opened the doors at the appropriate time. And then one day, as I thought I had the American dream, had a great job in an office, and after 5 years from starting from nothing, I thought, okay, this got to be the American dream, and this must be what God has in store. And all of a sudden, it was like God said, John, this is it. This is not it. And I said, well, what? It was like God spoke to me. This not it. So I told my wife, and she goes, what do you think it is? I said, I have no idea. About 2 weeks later, Bob Hartman called and said, would you consider singing for Petra? And I go, you got to be kidding. By that time, I was a big Petra fan, probably
right.
The only music I listened to, because I gave up all secular music because it was just too much temptation for me at that time. And it was a wonderful thing. That's sort of how God's worked in my life. So through music, I've learned a lot and been able to speak and bring across a testimony and a vision that God's put on my heart that hopefully has impacted a lot of people and in God's timing changed a lot of lives. It sure has changed mine.
Well, it seems like it, and I guess this kind of journey is the kind of journey that I had as well, as really not a Christian when I was a professional wrestler. I don't know if your publicist told you that. I have a background. I was a former professional wrestler, wrestled in the minor leagues, and did all that stuff. So it's kind of parallel lives. We went through really hard times, lots of, the wrong people to be associated with, and tough, yep, difficult times on the road, and
yep,
not making the right choices, staying up all night, drinking and who knows what, because
yep,
we just didn't know. We were just living, and we didn't know that there was something else that could guide us and lead our lives to make us feel at peace.
Exactly right. Now, I will say that as time went on, and the temptations and the stress and all that, you know, God uses peer pressure. I mean, the enemy uses peer pressure.
Yes.
He uses anything he possibly can. And I fell for it all. And I thought I was stronger than that. And you got to understand the enemy is very strong, too. And without
yes.
Christ, you're fair game. And I was fair game. And there was almost a victory in the enemy's eyes when I came that close to basically saying, I'm better off dead. But my wife was there saying, you know, tell me about Christ. And I finally, as a last resort, basically saying, this isn't going to do any good. I'll let her remember that I tried. I had a pastor that hit me right between the eyes with truth, and the Holy Spirit took over, and I was a changed man. And that one evening.
What a tremendous gift that those points, those situations. Walking in Bremen, Germany, that's where pretty much God spoke to me, and that's when my pro wrestling career pretty much, I made a couple comebacks, but that for like fun events and stuff for charity work. But that's when I decided this: if I'm going to have a family and I'm going to be married, I can't be part of that life. And that's what happened. So, so you get your ass. So basically, when that happened to you, you said, I'm going to continue to do music, but then you studied hard and worked hard in school to get a professional job, and then God called you to something else. And did everyone around you kind of question it, saying, really?
I mean, I got a degree in civil engineering.
Yeah.
And the day I got took my last final, I joined a band called Head East. And that band started, we started as a bar. It was a good band. I mean, it was a very talented band. And we ended up having a hit record that hit the charts big time on our own label. We finally signed up with A&M Records. And we skyrocketed quickly from a nobody to a pretty major regional band.
Okay.
And that lasted for about 5 years, 6 albums. We toured with every major tour that was happening in the U.S. at the time. It was a very major success story in the eyes of secular musicians. You know, people go, oh, my gosh, you've got the musician's dream, which I did. The only problem is you have so much of that dream, after a while it gets boring. You keep looking for that next high. And that's how it steamrolled me right into cocaine and booze. And so although I had a degree in engineering.
You said drugs and rock and roll and alcohol. When was that going on?
That was going on right after about a five-year period in the Head East days. I call it the Head East days, where I graduated from college. I went with this bar band. It turned into a touring band with a hit record. Because of that record, we toured every major tour that was happening at that time, especially in the Midwest. And, you know, it was a musician's dream. You would have thought everything would have been just great. But the truth is, after a while, even dreams get boring, and you start looking for that next high. And I'm afraid my high was cocaine and booze. And that combination just made me an alcoholic cocaine freak, and it just about destroyed me. In fact, it got me fired out of the band where everybody else was doing the same thing, but apparently I was doing it more extreme than anyone else. And so all of a sudden I go from being a, quote, you know, front man to a band that's very busy to nothing. I started my own band, which was just basically an excuse to stay drunk or high, you know, for the next 6 months, 24 hours a day. And at that end of that 6 months was the final. I mean, that's when I hit my lowest of lows.
Oh, my gosh.
But the only thing, but you got to understand, God saw that. And I think apparently I needed to get that low because meanwhile my wife gets saved. And she's trying to tell me about Christ, and I'm just not listening because I'm too cool to be a Christian.
Right.
And she just laid back and knew there would be a time that God would open up my heart. And when I sat down and decided suicide was going to be my answer, she came and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Remember, you promised you'd talk to my pastor today." I said, "When?" She says, "Last night when you're really drunk." I said, "Okay, you know," but I went there with the intentions of basically saying, I wanted her to see that I tried, but I had no intentions of changing. I already had it planned on how I was going to take my life. And I went there just to let her know that I was going to give it that effort. And I walked out a new person. I walked out with the Holy Spirit, and all that planning went right out the window, and I started a new life. I gave up music really quickly after that because the band that I was building was starting to play in bars and stuff, and as a Christian, I went,
right.
a baby Christian, oh my gosh, that's not where you need to be.
No, it's definitely not.
So I finally gave up music altogether and said, well, apparently I won't be ever singing, you know, I won't be singing again. I took up my college degree and said, okay, let's get a job. And the first job I could get, the only job I could get, was sweeping a floor in a tool and die factory. But that opened up the door to it. Just it was God's timing, you know. Every
yeah.
time I needed more money to pay off some debts, another job would come, and another job, another job. And I finally ended up as a cost and scheduling engineer for a mining construction company out of Indiana. Had two secretaries. This is in a 5-year period. So from sweeping a floor to having your own office, that was God's timing. And one night I just said, okay, one morning I said, this must be the American dream. I've got my kids in a great Christian school. I got a great church.
Right.
My first home. You know, it was like, this is it. And all of a sudden God goes, nope, this is not it, John. Don't be content here because things are going to be changing. And I told my wife that. And she goes, what do you think it is? And I said, I have no idea. And that's when Bob Hartman called me about a week later. And
right.
I go, you got, and that was, you know, that was the beginning of another new life for me. And so between the secular days and my Christian walk of 5 years, not being a baby, you know, not being a baby Christian anymore,
right.
God had me totally designed to be the front man for Petra.
And that's the amazing thing where he designs you where you might not think you're going. And then when those certain falls happen, you kind of start to question things,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to kind of refocus yourself again. And then as a Christian, that's the greatest part, is that you can refocus yourself when you lose that focus, you lose that intention, and that
yeah.
and that happens. But amazing what happened then. You get there and the rise starts right off
yep.
the bat. Your big break right off the bat.
Yep.
God had a plan for you. So once you joined the band, were they well known at that point in time? Or?
Oh yeah, they were the biggest Christian rock band in the world. So I went from not singing for 5 years to the first show we did was in Australia, Sydney, Australia, in front of 6,000 people. It was the first time I sang sober in 7 years. So it was because the last 2 years of Head East, I never sang sober. I was always in a roundabout way drunk on stage.
Yes.
And so and then after 5 years, we're talking 7 years of before I walked on stage again and sang sober, and it was like, whoa. I got so excited, I blew my throat out after about 3 songs, and the band was getting a little worried. Did they get the right guy? And I said, honest guy, because I'd been rehearsing with them, and they knew I could do it. They were just going, what's going on? I was just so excited to be able to do this again, and this time give a message that's life-changing. It was just such an amazing adventure to be able to use the talents God gave me, see 2020 of him, hindsight, you know, the old hindsight is
yes.
2020, and I look back and saw God's plan. It was like, oh, this is so cool. So it was, again, a mighty adventure. We had our ups and downs. I mean, the beginning of the touring season was amazing, and then the band had to take a little bit of a low because of changing singers and not knowing if it was going to work and all this kind of. I had to prove myself for about a year every time I walked on stage, and then we put our first record out with me called Back to the Street, and everybody's going, oh, this guy's legitimate. And so it just took time, but there were ups and downs, and Really, when it was all said and done, we watched so many amazing things get done with using five of the strangest people you're ever going to meet. God decided to use that package in many different ways. It was very cool. Still, even now, Petra, for one thing, is still being used in mighty ways. And my ministry, John Schlitt, my solo stuff is being used. You just have to be available.
Yes.
You just have to be available.
Exactly. When you joined them, this is when you could have hit rock bottom. People were questioning, can you be the lead singer for this band? They already have mm-hmm. such a great pedigree, and they're phenomenal, and they're number one. Now mm-hmm. you join them. It's kind of almost like a story of, how can we put a parallel to a non-Christian band where the lead singer
would be Van Halen.
Yes,
Van Halen.
Absolutely. I was thinking that. And,
yeah.
and you were able to jump on. Did you question yourself at times and say,
not
hey,
one
I
bit. Nope.
So
not one
how
bit.
Did you
I
keep
knew.
Your faith? How?
I knew for a fact that God had prepared me so much, with basically just that message, know that things would, and then I had a prophet prophesize over me saying, you will have your heart's desire, you're in for big change. And at that time, the only change I'd seen was I had to move from, I had moved from Illinois to Utah to Indiana, and it was like every time I had to move was a major uplifting of a family, and I'm going, I groaned. As he's giving me this prophecy, and I groaned, and he goes, oh, no, this is going to be your heart's desire. And this was like, a month before Bob called, and I'm thinking, what's my heart's desire? Because I had totally given up music. I mean, that was the last thing on my mind, only because I just figured it's been too long, there's no way, this kind of thing. And when he said, I'm going, what could be that? And then when Bob called, I says, this is God's plan. This is God's plan. So I had no doubts whatsoever that I was ready for it.
Amazing. And then that's how your faith cannot be shaken in those times. And then
Amen. Then
you go up the ladder, meaning you guys continue to perform well. And how many awards later? I mean, I'm looking, it's like a lot of awards later. And so I'm still trying to learn the Christian rock, Christian music type thing. I mean, I'm fans as a person. I listen every day to today's Christian music and whatever the one that's on in our Pittsburgh area.
Uh-huh.
I love the music I keep on. At one point, I just gave up. I said, all this other stuff's garbage and mess. I want to listen to this stuff when I'm working. And I'm glad I did because I was into the whole, I think it was Way FM over in
yeah.
Tampa, Florida, or in Naples area and stuff. And it's just such great. So I probably heard your music and have no idea. As I was talking to your publicist, the thing is I'm just learning this genre because,
uh-huh.
again, God never got me the opportunity to call to interview people like this. And it's so amazing for sure. So you go in and you go through this great run. What made you want to go solo? I mean, that's another challenge. And
actually, I started my solo career while I was still in Petra.
Really?
And part of it's because we had such great writers with Petra that they had already developed an identity that I was the front man. That was my job. I delivered the songs that I would. A privilege to be able to sing and record. And it was my job live to deliver them in an exciting way and make sure that not only on the CD, but live. And so I really never concentrated that much on writing. But as time went on, I was going out and doing, when the band was on vacation or they were not touring, I'd go out on my own and use tracks and go to smaller places,
Okay.
And then I start, as I was speaking, because a Christian concert shouldn't just be music. I mean, don't get me wrong, it should be exciting, but there should be an ultimate goal of getting a message, a life-changing
yes.
message across. You could do that with music, but I also believe you should do it through testimony, through speaking, through why you wrote, that kind of thing. And so I started realizing I have, I've got some things to say that actually Petra Music isn't covering at this moment, so I started writing my own stuff and went to the label and said, would you consider me as a solo artist? And they said, absolutely. And so my first album called Shake came out, and of all the ideas that I'd come up with before speaking, and it did real well. I think it charted up to like number 3 on the charts, and that's as a solo artist. So it was a good start. I did another album called Unfit for Swine. It wasn't a good start. It was a failure, and because of that, the label was going through a lot of changes. And they dropped me. I'd never been dropped before in my whole life. I'd never failed before. In the Hetty's days, in the Petra days, and this was my first failure, and it freaked me out a little. But meanwhile, at the same time, Bob, the leader, decided to leave the band to take care of his son, to homeschool his son. And okay. he gave the live responsibility to me. So... taking over that responsibility was a 24-hour day, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year type of job. So I had to put my solo career on hold. So I had this one record that didn't do any well, then I had to stop the career. And so for like the next 12 years, my solo career had been put on hold following a failure, which wasn't a good thing for me. But I was so busy making sure that I was doing God's work with Petra. And then when Petra decided to finally retire, I knew for a fact that would be, I was ready to start my solo career again. And so it's always been, music for me is an amazing tool.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an amazing key that opens up many locks that is my way of doing it. Is it the only way? Probably not, but God's gifted me to do it that way. So... although Petra retired, I have no intentions of retiring. I got plenty of things to do. And that is, I really believe he gave me a voice to use, and I'm going to use it until I don't have it anymore. And when that happens, maybe I'll do sign language, and hopefully I'll get the message out that way,
Because you hit rock bottom, John. You're not going to let anyone stop you. You're going to do God's will till you die.
Until
you get to heaven, and that's what you're saying, that there's nothing stopping you. There's no retirement for John Schlitt anytime soon.
No,
you're gonna
keep
going.
I don't think there's retirement's in the word. So I think, the field is plenty. The field is ripe. We need as many harvesters as possible.
Yes, absolutely.
And just because it's not quite as easy as it used to be, it just means I'm in another stage right now, and let's see where it takes me, and let's go for the adventure of what's next.
And that's always the fun part. If we can really understand the peace of being of Christ and understand that the Holy Spirit's guiding us and that we're going to have some ups and downs in that journey, but if we just keep our faith, it's a fun ride.
Let's talk about the
latest project you have, John. Let's talk about that, yeah.
Okay, well, actually, I've got two projects that I want to talk about.
Okay.
The latest rock album is called The Greater Cause. And then I've got another project that's only sort of seasonal called The Christmas Project. But let's talk about The Greater Cause.
Yes.
I think it's probably one of the best albums I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
Now, I have been part of some amazing records. Please understand, the Petra catalog is truly an amazing blessing to be part of. But I also have been very blessed with the people that I've worked with on my solo career, and I think it really came together with The Greater Cause. There's some amazing songs, some amazing talent, and it's going to last a while. I mean, it came out like 3 or 4 years ago, and it's still, maybe 3 years ago, and it's still, I need to keep working it because not enough people have heard it and can use it. So I'm very excited that we're able to talk about it right now. The Greater Cause is a beautiful record. If you like rock, if you like aggressive music.
I do.
All right. Have you heard it yet?
Way FM is one of my favorites when I would go to Naples, Florida and listen to Way FM. So, yeah, and that gets a little bit more of the Christian rock, hard rock type stuff than, let's say, K-Love, in a way.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. Now, they're playing the modern stuff now. and I'm called classic, and that's fine because that's the music style I like.
That's good.
So you're going to have to go out and find it because you're not going to get it played on WayFM. The WayFM plays some of the old Petra stuff, but they don't play any of the new stuff that I'm part of. So, and God bless them, they're doing their job. I just wish that I was part of their inventory, but nowadays I'm not. So that's another thing where when you give me a chance to talk, I can let folks know that it exists out there, and you just have to venture out and investigate a little bit more.
Absolutely. Well, that's the nice thing is you don't right now, like, for example, I just bought a new van, and the van hooks up to, you know, music, so you can just listen to any music you want. It does,
there you go.
You don't need a radio anymore, or you listen to my show anywhere in the world, for sure. So let's kind of jump right into the other Christmas project, because I'm going to have you back on, John, when it comes close to Christmas, too, about the project.
Don't
promote that again, because, you know, it's so fun. Christmas in July is our final days of July are coming, but Christmas, tell us about this Christmas project.
A beautiful record. There's one original song, but the rest are classics that were redone the way I'd like to hear Christmas done. Now, please understand, I am a rocker, but I also totally understand the spirit of Christmas music. And so with that respect, I took the spirit of Christmas through music and hopefully made it a little more aggressive, something that I would love. And I think the combination of those desires to reach were culminated into a beautiful record.
Fantastic. And, you know, and that, I definitely love to hear some of that stuff, too. I'll definitely contact your publicist, and we'll have me on for it. One of the greatest things was this one Christmas holiday thing with a bunch of old rockers that did it. And they, someone from Van Halen, I forget the name of the group, but I had a blast talking to them. And and so definitely that's the kind of stuff. That's what I want to rock out. I'm doing my work during Christmas. I want the Christmas songs. I want to. That's, those Christmas projects are the fantastic thing. Cause, you know, when you're looking at those 2 months, November all the way to Christmas, you don't want to listen to anything but positive Christian music and Christmas music. So, you know, you want to rock out to those things. You want to keep it going. And and you want. So, what songs are on your Christian Christmas album?
Oh, I was afraid you're going to ask me. Little Drummer Boy.
All right.
Which is, I think, probably one of my favorite. Messiah, Handel's Messiah, done very different. We Three Kings. Oh, my gosh. Those are just naming a few. I'll be honest, I haven't... I haven't been concentrating on my Christmas album right now. I feel very inadequate, buddy. So I can't tell you anymore.
Oh, that's okay. That's why people have to go find information on you, and that's a perfect segue at the end as we've gone over our live time for recording still. Where's the best place we can find information on you, John? And I tell you, you're going to come back on the show. And any of the people that that I've been having from the Christian rock, Christian music world, but you need to educate me. I really have to understand this. So when I was listening to 10 years ago, WayFM, I heard you on the radio then. See, that's the interesting part. This is probably the funniest thing for Christian music fans saying, this guy has no idea, but I'm inquisitive, ask the right questions, and figure it out. But I'm so into it, and I love learning about it. It was an honor to have you, and definitely consider you a celebrity as well. You don't want to just call yourself, you know, people say you're a legend. Well, you're a celebrity as well when the success that you've had. But where can we find information on you? Where can we go?
I think probably the best way to do it, buddy, would just be go to, well, you can Google John Schlitt anytime, but I'd go to John W. Schlitt, my website. It's johnwschlitt.com, and it has all that kind of information. It has it pretty much has my life in a you know, or go to Wikipedia or any of that. I'm out there, but to get it really, I think probably the best way to do it would be to go to johnwschlitt.com.
Well, fantastic, and I'm sure you have. Do you have a Twitter as well and Facebook?
You know what? I'm sure I have faith. Yes, I do. Don't ask me how to get it. Just go to John W. Schlitt, because I'm not very good at that. I have a staff that takes care of that, and I'm afraid I'm still sort of computer illiterate. So again, it's one of the things where my staff gets so mad at me because I don't have it right on my tongue, you know, right on the end of my tongue. But yeah, I would please say just go there, and then as far as Twitter and that kind of stuff, I'm sure I'm there too.
Well, I'm a Twitter master, and it's funny when you have these staffs do it because, again, it's the immediacy. But what's happening that's so awesome is every social media channel can be used to God's light help if you literally target the people that you're looking for to get the message out. And that's fantastic.